We're back in Parshat Shemot. Up until now, we've discussed at length the opening two paragraphs and the underlying themes of Sefer Shemot and Parshat Shemot. We've discussed the concept of the reproductive and creative energies being the underlying themes that are really launching off Shemot, Parshat Shemot, and Sefer Shemot, embodied by Yosef, embodied by the Paro, Vayishutzu, Vayirbu, Vayatzu, Me'od Mo'va, Timlea, Taratam, at the very beginning then of the first paragraph. The concept of Shemot, building an eternity. We've talked about the practical applications last time. This year, I want to start moving forward all the way to the next paragraph. And this is going to be our last one on Parshat Shemot, or else we could say in Parshat Shemot the entire year. But we have to cover all of Sefer Shemot this semester. So this is going to be, we're going to try to create an underlying thread that will sew up the rest of the Parsha for us, and do it through the introduction at the beginning of what's referred to here as Perek Bet. So the beginning of Perek Bet, which starts the new paragraph of the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. This year in particular is a merging of... I had the excuse of actually being able to sit down and think a little bit before the semester started, and I have a lot of notes on this, and I'd like to share some of them, but they're my ideas, and if you see anything that you disagree with or you think is incorrect, definitely call me out on it. One of my Rebbe shears that's not on Parsha, it's actually on a different series out on Hibonanut, which I thought really actually together bridged the end of this Parsha. Taking a look, and I put them on your sheets just so that way you could have it all in one place in front of you, and also we can reference it. I could also put it online as a source sheet. That whole block paragraph that you have in the beginning of your source sheet, you can just open up your Chumash, which you should have with you. It's just the next two, three paragraphs in Parshat Shemot, starting from the very beginning of Perek Bet and going into the beginning of Perek Gimel. And here, as we talked about in our opening shiur, we have three distinct paragraphs. We have one self-contained paragraph, which you talked about as somehow kind of the story of Moshe Rabbeinu, from the moment of his birth until he runs away and marries Tzipora, when he's running away from Paro, from Mitzrayim. The next paragraph, which seems to be the beginning of the Geula and these small three psukim that we'll be talking about, what's happening here in terms of the beginnings of Geula, and then Moshe Rabbeinu being recruited to actually begin that Geula process. So I want to take these piece by piece. Let's start with the first chunk, which is the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. I want to see how this is somehow the kickoff of the redemption process, meaning we clarified what it requires for redemption, what defines us as Jewish people, what defines us as the people who are going to be redeemed. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who's going to take us into the redemption process. Who is this Moshe Rabbeinu? How is this setting up his story? How is this setting up his life? So, I personally divided up this piece into two distinct sections in terms of the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. I strongly suspect that what we're seeing presented here in terms of who Moshe Rabbeinu is both his nature and his nurture, the two things that primarily give to the essence of a person. There are certain inbred qualities in a person, and there are certain things that a person gains from their upbringing. So if we take a look at the first half of this paragraph, I think that's really the nature, the first half is his nature and nurture. Sorry, I apologize. The first half is his nature and his nurture, meaning what he's given, and then the second half is him expressing that and bringing that out into the world. I apologize for that not being clear. The opening of Perek Bet. We meet Moshe Rabbeinu. The first half of this paragraph in Chumash, I believe, is his nature and his nurture, and the second half of this paragraph is the expression of that, the manifestation of what he gained as a child as it comes out into the world. Let's take a look and see if that plays out, and I strongly suspect this to be the case. Vayelach ish mibet Levi vayikach et bat Levi, vatar ha'isha vatilet bein vatira oto ki tofu, vatisbeno shosha yirachim. So this ish mibet Levi comes and is together with this bat Levi, whole discussion there that we don't have time to get into in terms of why they're referred to as such, although we see that bayit theme come back again. Vatar and vatilet and bein is all coming back to our discussions of reproduction. Vatira oto ki tofu. She sees that he is good. And already inherently here we see that something unusual about Moshe Rabbeinu that makes him unique. Vatira otoki tofu, and Rashi and Chazal all jump on that, meaning that's screaming from the Pesukim. And Rashi on Vatira otoki tofu links it back and says, just like it was kitov by the first day of creation, by the creation of light, so too Moshe Rabbeinu was shining. something in his nature, not his nurture, something inherently in him that was already unique, some potential, some capacity there that seems to be unique by him. Parenthetically, if one were to look up that midrash, I'm sorry I didn't put it on the source sheets, but Chazal there say there are different interpretations of what Kitov is. That's the one that Rashi brings down. But there's actually another interpretation, that there are many interpretations there. One of them is that he was born already having a bris milah, which relates to everything we've talked about until this point as well. That he was already born with a purity in the area of reproduction. But either way, however you want to look at it, it's all the same. There's something inherently unique about Moshe Rabbeinu from the moment he's born. And his mother recognizes that and desperately takes pity on him and tries to hide him and save him. And even when the time comes where she can't save him anymore, what does she do? Pshat, Chumash, and stories that we've learned in childhood and go over this every year.
Miriam to watch out.
Well, why can't Miriam stay and watch out for him? Somebody else said it? Right, she puts him in a basket and puts him there. She does whatever she can to try to keep him alive. And she puts him in the basket, and then what happens, like you said, Sippy, his sister then goes to try to follow and see what's going to happen to him and take care of him, whatever happens to him. Then there's this funny story with Bat Paro. Right, the most unexpected heroic figure in the story. Bat Paro comes out and sees this basket in the water. She's going down. She's the daughter of Paro. She could be focused entirely on herself. But she sees and takes notice of this basket coming down the stream and goes to, according to Chazal, supernatural and superhuman lengths, but even so, from her stature, superhuman lengths, to go and see what's inside of this basket, finds out that it's a child. The psukim don't explicitly point out that she knew exactly what was happening. Take a look at Pasuk Vav. Vatiftach vatirei vatel. She opens up the basket and sees the child. Vinei nar bochen. She sees a child crying. Vatachmol alav. She immediately takes pity on him. Immediately takes pity on him. Vatomer miyaldei ha'ivrim heim. And she knows it's a Jew. And she knows that her father's decree is to take those Jewish boys and kill them on the spot. But she takes pity on this child that's crying from the water despite the fact that he's Jewish. And she decides to keep him and take care of him. And then his sister runs over and says, oh, I don't know what happened. It seems you found a child. Maybe he's Jewish. I can find some woman who's probably not his mother, but then again is, and I can bring her to go and be the wet nurse to take care of the child. And there's this whole kind of like understated conversation between Miriam and Bat Paro. Yeah, find this quote-unquote random woman to go and nurse the child and be able to take care of the child for a long time, and then he'll come back and stay alive in my home. Interesting story that, again, doesn't often get unpacked. And recognizing what's happening with Bat Paro. I think what's happening in this story of the nature and nurture of Moshe is we're seeing that there is definitely something inherently unique about Moshe Rabbeinu. And if we're going to have somebody, Lokam B'Yisrael K'Moshe Od, or one of the 13 principles of faith, according to we have them, according to the Rambam, is that there's no Navi like Moshe, there's no individual in Jewish history like Moshe, there is going to be something inherently, naturally built into him on a genetic level that makes him Moshe Rabbeinu. Vatiro Toki Tovu. He's shining with the light of the first day of creation, which Alpini Star, the Oraganuz, and all the things that come along with that, and its connections to Torah, which we'll get to over time, which he's going to bring down. All of that's built into him on a genetic level. But what is the theme that comes up again and again and again in terms of the nurture of Moshe by all of the parties involved? Question. What comes up again and again and again? Which I think is embodied in that verb that we used by Bat Paro. Vatachmol. Taking pity, having care, conscientiousness. Recognizing what's going on with the other. Whether it's Moshe's mother, who's watching him carefully, hiding him, going to extraordinary lengths to keep him alive, even if he's not going to still be within her home and be her child anymore. She doesn't know what's going to happen to him. But wherever he ends up, the likelihood of him coming back to her was zero. But it's God, so he can do whatever he wants. Moshe does come back to her. But she puts him in a basket and says, I just want you to live. And then Bat Paro comes down and says, I know it's a Jewish boy, I know I'm supposed to kill him, and I'm the daughter of the person who made that decree, who is the king of Egypt. But I'm still going to have pity on him. And the sister who says, my mother may have stayed back, but I'm going to follow him to the ends of the earth to find out what happens to him. And and then make sure to reorganize everything that he can come back to his mother and come back to his bayit, come back to his home. All of the people in his life are caring individuals. Yeah.
I don't get why it's so surprising that his mother...
Less surprising, much more surprising by Bat Paro, of all people. And his sister still goes to more extraordinary lengths than most might have. Depends on what family you come from. Baruch Hashem, I have great sisters also, but I'm saying it's not always that simple, and it's still going to extraordinary lengths. When you got to imagine a poor Jewish young girl walking up in the middle of a scene full of commotion to the daughter of the oppressor who's killing all of her brothers. To save her brother, her chances of execution are pretty high. To me, I count that as extraordinary lengths and compassion. Similarly, I think, by the way, and this is really going farther out, how is the person referred to who saves Moshe Rabbeinu from the river? What's her name, though? What?
Batya.
We don't actually know her name from the text. Where do we know that name from? From what? From Chazal. That fits into what we're going to say 100% also. Even just sticking with her name in Chumash, though, the text doesn't explicitly give a name, but that name certainly is going to help us. She's just called in the text Bat Paro. And I think that there's a lot hidden in there also. Think of the previous discussions we've had. What is Paro all about? What is Paro versus the Jewish people? The Egyptians versus the Jewish people? What is putting them at odds with each other? Everything we've talked about in the last three shiurim. Physicality versus spirituality, but a little bit more explicitly in how we've taken it forward. Being sucked into the moment versus being focused on the future and productivity. The very fact that Paro has a bat is very interesting. That's Paro producing something in this world. And I wonder if there isn't a hint to the fact that Bat Paro acts as the antithesis to Paro in this story, where Paro wants to kill the future of the Jewish people, but because he allows himself to actually create something that will create future, she's the one who allows for the continuation of the Jewish people as well. I wonder if Bat Paro is not the antithesis to Paro herself in her very existence. B'derech Afshar. That's definitely taking it farther than it's clearly in the text, but I suspect that to be the case. In any event, we have this buildup of his nature and nurture as being somebody who's focused on care. And wouldn't you know it, in this one paragraph in the text, all limited to one paragraph, we then go forward and we start to meet Moshe as he emerges, as he expresses himself in the world. As he moves from his upbringing to expressing his identity. And the first thing we know of him is Perek Bet Pasuk Yud Aleph. Vayehi bayamim ahem vayigdal Moshe vayetze el achav, and unsurprisingly then, vayar b'sivlotam. He sees the pain of his brothers. Vayar ish mitzrim hakeat ish ivri vayichav v'chule. But his immediate reaction when he goes out in the world to express who he is in the text is that of compassion for the other, of taking care of the other, of recognizing the pain of the other. What are the three stories that are recounted, one after the other, right here in the rest of this text, that define Moshe Rabbeinu's going out into the world? Let's put them on the board. What's the first story that we just started reading? Killing the Egyptian. Let's say it's sharper than that, though. He's also saving the Jew. Story number two. What happens next? Immediately, and by the way, these are not separated stories. The next starts. Pasuk Yud Gimel, Vayitze Bayom Hashini, the very next day, is the next part of this story. Story number three. What's story number two?
Fighting.
He sees two Jews fighting. And when he sees two Jews fighting, he tries to create peace between them. And they turn on him. And he has to run away. He immediately runs away. And here we go, it's on this page. He immediately runs away. Perek bet pasuk tezayin. We meet the Kohen Midian with his sheva banot, who are going to water their sheep, to give water to their sheep. And as Esther began to say,
the daughters are trying to like attack us. We see them.
They're attacked by the other shepherds. And so he goes, Vayavo haro'im vayigarshum. The shepherds come and they literally means exile them. They throw away these daughters of the Kohen Midian of Yitro. Vayakam Moshe v'yoshi'an. He even uses the word of Yeshua. He is their salvation. He saves them. Here he's saving the seven daughters from external forces. The story concludes, and this I'm going to put not as a number, but even just as an asterisk, as the very closure of the story. Because of what he does in saving the daughters of Yitro, Yitro then brings him into his house, gives him, also unsurprising with all of the previous shirin that we had, gives him Tzipora as a wife, and they immediately have a child, right? Because that's what this is all about. It's all about continuing to produce toward the future. So he marries Tzipora, and they have a child called
Gershom.
Ki amar gir hayiti be'eres nochriya, full stop. The first thing that, you know, and we foreshadowed it very heavily earlier. I mean, what's the obvious thing that's going to link these three stories together? Caring, sensitivity, noticing what's going on in the world, caring for the other. That's the premise for creating the individual, for the expression of the individual who is going to bring out the Geula. The premise of Geula is care. The premise of Geula is care for the other. And he who is going to bring out that, who is going to bring forth that Geula, has to be somebody who expresses that care on all levels. He has care for his fellow, he's willing to save a Jew from the outside force, he's willing to care for the two Jews who are fighting each other, he's willing to care for these seven random people he doesn't even know. But he's somebody who cares for others. That's Pashut from the text, I think. I would claim that you could take it even one step further. We talk very often in these shiurim how the origins of something are always planting the seeds for the totality of that usually word, idea, concept. I think this opening story about Moshe is also foreshadowing the entirety of the life of Moshe itself. B'derech Afshar, hear me out. Story number one. What is he doing in story number one? From who? What is the first thing Moshe Rabbeinu does when he finally steps up to become Moshe Rabbeinu, the leader of the Jewish people? He brings makot to Mitzrayim. He comes to bring plagues onto Egypt and to strike down the Egyptians. That's the first thing that he does as a leader. He then moves on. And what does he spend the majority of the rest of Torah desperately trying to do? Not just stop them fighting each other, but he's also at odds with them. Meaning this story isn't just two Jews fighting each other. It's him trying to help them and them lashing out at him. Does that sound familiar? All of Sefer Bamidbar? Large portions of Sefer Shemot? Moshe Rabbeinu desperately trying to work things out for the betterment of the Jewish people, but the Jewish people responding by lashing out at him. And story number three is the goal of what Moshe Rabbeinu is trying to do, is literally constantly drawing forth water for his people, sustaining them on a physical level. And we know so many stories about Moshe Rabbeinu revolve around him actually bringing them water when they're thirsty, which is exactly what he does in this story. He brings the seven daughters of Yitro water. On a more metaphorical level, Moshe Rabbeinu is constantly drawing up new waters all the time. Always drawing up new waters. In fact, so much so that drawing up water is his essence. How do we know it's his essence? because that's his very name, as defined in this paragraph. Kimin hamayim mishitihu. He's drawn up from the water, and he's always drawing up new waters. What is water always nimshal to in Judaism? Torah. He's bringing out tremendous amounts of Torah. In fact, the beginning of Sefer Devarim, where he brings out his layer of Torah through him, through his own expression, on whatever level that means, we'll talk about that in three semesters, whatever level that means, it opens up by saying, Ho'il Moshe, this is the pasuk, I think, Vav or Zion at the beginning of Devarim, Ho'il Moshe be'er et ha-Torah hazot. It intentionally uses the word be'er to mean explain the Torah, but also draw out new layers, new levels of Torah. What else is Mayim Nimshal to? In Midot.
Muhammad.
Really up on the food chain. Chesed. And as an aside, in Havdalah, what are we Nimshal Mayim to? Ushavta Mayim Misa Somi Maneha Yeshua. Drawing up waters of Yeshua. Drawing up waters of Chesed. We don't have the time to go into this now, but those of you who have been following along, in terms of the Sirot, we'll hopefully continue to unpack this more. Moshe Rabbeinu is Netzach. Chesed is being drawn out by Netzach in the Sirot. So he's drawing forth the Chesed. He's drawing forth the waters. He's drawing forth the Chesed. But all of Moshe Rabbeinu is all about drawing all of these things forth. Now what's also interesting is, again, just to make sure that it's clear that everything links into everything else. When does Moshe Rabbeinu begins to explain the Torah, give his own rendition of the Torah with either Ruach HaKodesh or it's God's words, God's organizing, there's many different interpretations of what's happening in the beginning of Sefer Devarim and what it means that Moshe Rabbeinu is giving this speech, but it's part of Torah. Is it humanity? Is it superhumanity? Is it God? What is it? Unclear, question mark. But that being said, Moshe Rabbeinu begins to Ho'il Moshe Be'erat HaTorah Hazot. When is the date given for that happening? Anybody know when Sefer Devarim actually takes place?
Is it like 40 days before we go into...
Close, yes. Around then, which would make it what? When does Moshe Rabbeinu die? Zayin Adar. What's 37 days before that, which is when he starts giving it over, according to the Pesukim, right there? The first of?
Shvat.
So he starts giving over the entirety of the Torah in the month of Shvat, which is, by the way, the part of the cycle of the year where we start reading Sefer Shemot, in terms of the cycle of the year of the Torah readings. And Shvat is all about, what's Tu B'Shvat all about? Especially people who are in plain view. What is Shvat all about? Well, not just trees. Tu B'Shvat is all about us being nimshal to an object whose whole purpose is to draw forth water and to produce it into sap and then eventually fruit. All of those things begin to merge on top of each other as well. But all of these inanim are interlinked. But this is who Moshe Rabbeinu is. We're seeing his whole life being foreshadowed here. In striking down the Egyptians, trying desperately to help Jews who are constantly fighting him back, and continuing to draw forth new waters of Torah, of Chesed, of Yeshua throughout his entire life. But what is Moshe Rabbeinu's inevitable fate? Which means that he's always going to remain in Galut, exile. Which then is interesting that the paragraph that perhaps summarizes the entirety of the life of Moshe Rabbeinu ends with him producing a son or a legacy named Gershom, Ki Ger Hayiti Be'eretz Nochriah. I didn't see that anywhere. All of this is my own thoughts, but I strongly suspect this to be the case. What is Zipporah doing there? That's not... I'd have to quote Rabbi Nachman to pull that one together, so I'm not going to do that in this context. Anyway, it's interesting, I can tell you about it afterward. But it's a very good Rabbi Nachman. Okay. Questions on this piece? Yes?
Can you repeat the last point about Moshe Rabbeinu's
inevitable fate? Fate. Is that he ends up not being able to go into Eretz Yisrael. He remains in exile. And the last words of the paragraph, perhaps describing, foreshadowing the entire life of Moshe Rabbeinu, is Batilad Bein, he produces a child, meaning his legacy. He's producing, what's his future going to hold? Vayikrat Shmo Gershom, Ki Amar Ger Hayiti Be'eretz Nochrian. He remains in that foreign land. He remains outside, not being able to go to his homeland, not being able to go to Eretz Yisrael. He gets stuck outside. That's his inevitable fate at the conclusion of his life. B'derech HaEfshar. Other questions, thoughts, comments? Good? In the 5 minutes we have remaining, I want to just pull that one last piece together and show how this really draws itself out and wraps up the entirety of the rest of the Parsha. We just defined Moshe Rabbeinu as being the person who cares. Now that we've identified in the text the individual who can bring out redemption, because redemption is prefaced on care, we need to see care expressed. We need to see that that is in fact the midah that we need. So who's going to show us that ultimately that is the quintessential midah of redemption? God. And that's the next paragraph. That's why it flows directly from that paragraph. They cry out because of the Avodah. And they cry out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And their cries get up to El Elohim min Avodah. Vayishma Elokim et na'akatam. God hears their cries. Vayizkor Elokim et brito. And God remembers his covenant. At Abraham, at Yitzhak, at Yaakov. Vayar Elokim et bnei Yisrael. Vayeda Elokim. God pays a lot of attention to the pain of the Jewish people. And care from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, from up above, is what kicks off the actual redemptive process. He is the Redeemer Moshe. But what starts the actual redemption process? God starts himself with care. Vayishma, Vayizkor, Vayar, Vayida, those are the active verbs by HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol on these psukim. He sees their pain, he hears them. And Rashi picks up on this consistently throughout the rest of the Parsha. Vayida Elokim, says Rashi in Peret Pasuk Chafei. You have it on your sheets. Vayar Elokim, Natan Alehem Lev, he put his heart to them and paid attention to them. Velo Ha'elim Einav, and he wouldn't close his eyes to their suffering. Just emphasizing what's already in the Pesukim. Then God comes to Moshe Rabbeinu. And when God comes to Moshe Rabbeinu, he comes to him in a burning bush. And there's these extraneous psukim that emphasize that Moshe Rabbeinu went and turned around specifically to look at the bush. That's Perek Gimel, that's in the same, again, if that this was paragraph number one, this there is paragraph 2a and 2b, right? We have this Parsha Stuma. That's on your sheets, right? This is a Petucha. This is laying the groundwork of who is Moshe Rabbeinu. Then we have this Parsha Stuma. God cares, expresses that care and concern, and then we meet Moshe Rabbeinu, who himself is going to bring out on the human side the Geula. And in terms of Moshe Rabbeinu and that expression, Vayar Hashem, this is Pasuk Dala, Vayar Hashem Kisar Lirot. God sees that Moshe Rabbeinu turns to see. Now the obvious thing that he's turning to see is what? The burning bush. Who wouldn't want to turn to see? Chazal say, no. That's not worth noting in the text. What did Moshe Rabbeinu turn to see that God cares about? In the next source on, from Shmot Rabbah on your sheets. Hadau dichtiv, vayar Hashem kisar lirot, ra'ah HaKadosh Baruch Hu shesar Moshe me'asakav lirot et sivlotam sheYisrael. Meaning that what we saw before, where Moshe Rabbeinu goes, Vayar b'sivlotam, that turning of Moshe Rabbeinu to see the pain of his fellow Jews, that turning is what God sought to reveal himself to Moshe and choose Moshe as the Redeemer, says Chazal. It's not spectacular that Moshe Rabbeinu turns to see a burning bush. It's spectacular that somebody who grows up in the house of Paro, who doesn't need to in any way connect himself to the Jewish people, turns to see the pain of his brothers down there lowly on the ground, being beaten by the Egyptians. That's what Chazal say is worthy of him being revealed to, is worthy of him having the revelation and being the start of the redemption himself. And we see this consistently within Moshe Rabbeinu as well. We'll skip the next. There's. See if we can come back to it. We're basically out of time. This care on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe Rabbeinu is what's being built, is what's being expressed in the Parsha. We have the foundations of Moshe Rabbeinu, the expression, God expressing care as being the foundations of Geula, then Moshe Rabbeinu showing his care as well, and showing God showing that Moshe Rabbeinu's care is the beginning of the Geula itself as well. At the very end of the Parsha, what happens, jumping forward, we're skipping a lot, but again, we have to wrap up the Parsha. The end of the parsha closes with Moshe Rabbeinu going and coming to Paro and saying, "Let my people go." And Paro says, "Who is this God?" We'll come back to that next time or two times from now. "Who is this God? I know what you're talking about." And in fact, make it even worse for them. And the people come and say, "Moshe, how could you do this to us?" And Moshe Rabbeinu then turns to God in the closing psukim of this parsha. And Moshe Rabbeinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the second to last source on your page, which is the last two psukim of the parsha, "Vayashav Moshe al Hashem," and then Moshe immediately goes back to God, and shows that Moshe Rabbeinu is ready to take up issue with God when God does things that Moshe Rabbeinu is uncomfortable with, that Moshe is not afraid. "Vayomer Adoshem, lama hariota lama zeh? Why are you doing evil to this people? V'lama zeh shelachtani? And why did you send me?" So Rashi here adds in a key piece of dialogue. He says, "Why did you do evil to those people?" is a fine question, but what does that do with sending him or not sending him? So Rashi says that there's another line of text here from Moshe Rabbeinu that we're missing. Rashi, in the last source on your page, Rashi Perakei Pasuk Chaf Bet, "Lama hariota la'ama zeh? Why are you doing evil to these people?" Says Rashi, putting words in the mouth of Moshe Rabbeinu, "Ve'im tomar, lama echpat lecha? And God, if you turn to me and you tell me, what do you care? Then what was your point in sending me in the first place?" Meaning Moshe Rabbeinu, as Rashi is explaining throughout the entirety of the parsha, as this parsha is all about care, the geula is kicked off by concern for the other. Moshe Rabbeinu is saying, "Why are you doing evil to these people? Because if you're only sent me to bring bad to these people, what was the purpose of sending me? Because the whole purpose of geula is to show care. So if the whole purpose of geula was to show care, don't have sent me at all. It undermines the entire premise of the geula itself. If you tell me why do you care, then I shouldn't be here," says Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a very powerful line when you understand it in context. Putting that into perspective, what's happening here is we're seeing that the underpinnings, the origins of Geula, the origins of redemption, now and for all time, and this couldn't be more lemaisa, is to show care and concern for the other. For one last time, we'll talk about this in terms of it being the opening parsha of Sefer Shemot. Moving away from the Sefer of the Avot, the individuals, into the Sefer of the Banim. What makes us the Banim is that we're no longer these crazy, spectacular individuals. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Valea. No more spectacular individuals. We're just B'nai Yisrael. And if we don't care for each other, then the book of the Banim can't come to fruition. We're redeemed as a people, and we can only be redeemed if we show care and concern for each other as a people. That's what we're trying to accomplish here. We're coming into Yom Kippur 2 days from now. We don't say, "Ashamti, bagarti, gazalti, dibarti dofi." Ashamnu, bagadnu, gazalnu, dibarnu dofi. Meaning, when we're coming to ask HaKadosh Baruch Hu to really create a fresh new year, it's only if we're seeing care and concern for the others around us. Very short anecdote. Apologize. A very short anecdote, which just like blew my mind when it happened to me. Two years ago, every year I daven in Shtiblach and in shuls, and Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they don't charge for seats. It's my type of shuls. They don't charge for seats. It's a different philosophy of what a shul is. So I go out of my way to make sure to buy an aliyah for way beyond what I should be spending on an aliyah, because A, you're supposed to halachically, and B, also, it's my way of giving to the shul and showing a karas hatov, both for the fact they don't charge and for the fact they don't charge. And I got an aliyah, and I was called up. And afterward, because you spend that amount of money, so they give you a mishaberach. So I'm listing off everybody in my family's name, right? The extra mishaberach. And suddenly I went, and I'm not saying this to put myself on a pedestal. I'm very upset with myself. I looked at the gabbai and I was like, "Vet kola Yehudim, the Queen's College." And he looked at me and he smirked, like I was like out of my mind. What does that mean? And I was sitting there and my face was red. But not because I was embarrassed by him, I was embarrassed by myself. I was embarrassed that it took me 2 years of being part of this community to care at all to daven on your behalf when I was getting up there Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. That's why my face is red. The goal of what we're trying to do over life every year, deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, is to broaden our horizons of care. Because that's what creates redemption. That's what brings Geula. That's what makes us in the image of Moshe Rabbeinu as that Vayoshian, as the Yeshua coming through ourselves. So Bezrat Hashem, we should be able to all broaden our own horizons to whatever extent we can this Yom Kippur, to recognize that we're not just davening for ourselves and our own futures, but the future of everybody else, because we're all going to be Nigal together or not. and through our increasing care amongst ourselves and in the world, be able to bring forth the springs of Torah, the springs of Chesed, and the springs of Yeshua, and this year, Bezrat Hashem, should be the year of the final redemption.